Welcome to Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. Coming up on today's show, Wall Street giddy about a new stimulus. Futures are up this morning. What do they know that perhaps we don't? Nancy Pelosi, Steven Mnuchin are going to meet again today. We'll bring you the very latest on the stimulus front and why today is that artificial deadline that Nancy Pelosi set. We're also going to look historically, you know, does a stimulus actually work? Has it helped us over the past few months? What can we expect it to do as we head into the dark days with fewer lights on, as we head into daylight saving time, darker temperatures, colder temperatures, coronavirus cases spiking? Will the stimulus actually help us, or will it kick the can down the street a little bit further? We're also going to look at, someone wrote in and was talking about their mortgage, and of course, people are being crushed right now. You know, having to still pay a mortgage, but having hours cut, not making as much money, or where both spouses in the family were working, one person loses their job. Now the pay that they had in their house is cut in half. What do you do? We'll look at a question from one of our viewers today on that very question. We're also going to look at, is a Fed digital dollar coming? I just saw someone ask in the chat just now, are we going to a cashless society? Well, this morning we are one step closer to that reality. We heard from Fed Chief Jerome Powell speaking yesterday at the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and he weighed in on this new Fed digital currency. Where are we with all of this? We're going to ask an expert. Anthony Papliano is going to be joining us, who's a cryptocurrency expert and knows all about blockchain. We're going to ask him that specific question. On today's show, all of that and more. If you're new here, welcome. Please smash that like button and subscribe to the channel. This is the only morning news show for the average person, the 99%, not Wall Street. And when you smash that like button, it really helps us, because then YouTube will suggest it out to more people. It lets YouTube know in their algorithm that, hey, we should share this with somebody else who could benefit, build a stronger financial future. So please do that and subscribe to the channel. If you are new here, Grover is here, my co-host. He is on this rainy, kind of chilly Tuesday morning. He's curled up and ready for a good show this morning. And I am too. So let's talk about the very latest this morning on the stimulus front. And we're going to talk about historically, has it helped anyone? Where are we? And why is Wall Street this morning super giddy about that? If you look at the futures numbers this morning, they're up. Wall Street is excited this morning. They were down last night. They were hoping, I think, by the end of the night, by the end of close of session yesterday, that we would have seen some sort of a stimulus news. So they go down. And then over the nighttime, as we're waking up, the futures are up. I don't know who they're talking to. They kind of go in this wave. It's been like an undulation over the past few months. And one thing Wall Street, you know, does not like is uncertainty. You know, there are all signs pointing now to a Joe Biden victory. According to Wall Street, the Wall Street betting right now has Joe Biden with a 77% chance of winning the presidency. I don't know if you're a betting person, you want to put your money in that or not, but that's where Wall Street sees it going. It's where Vegas odds betting are right now. President Trump is spending money, or is running out of money, and only spending in certain states. Joe Biden has like three times the amount of money and is spending in states that the Trump campaign basically gave up on. That's a bad sign. So you look at the latest polling as well. All Vice President Biden has to do right now is screw it up. I mean, that's why the strategy of him being quiet right now is coming out. Like, just, you know, if he wants to win, just don't screw it up. Don't do something stupid at a debate, which Thursday night, of course, we'll see that next debate. Just keep your mouth shut. It's really their strategy right now. So Wall Street just does not like that uncertainty. Well, who's going to be president? Are we going to see big tax cuts, et cetera? They're fine now about the presidency, because I think they've already aligned up and believe that Joe Biden's going to win the presidency. So they're fine, because nothing much is going to change corporate wise for them. They just want to know who's going to be president. And the other uncertainty is around the stimulus. You know, are these companies going to continue to have additional rounds of layoffs? Will consumer spending be there, et cetera? So Wall Street overnight seeing these numbers and getting excited about the potential for a stimulus coming within the next few hours. So the very latest on this front comes from Drew Hamill, who is the White House, or excuse me, is Nancy Pelosi's speaker, and said the speaker and Steven Mnuchin spoke at 3 o'clock today for approximately 53 minutes. In this call, they continue to narrow the differences. The speaker has tasked committee chairs to reconcile differences with their GOP counterparts in key areas. The speaker continues to hope that by the end of the day Tuesday, we will have clarity on whether we will be able to pass a bill before the election. The two principals will speak again tomorrow, and staff will continue to work around the clock. So that is good news. That is good news that they are continuing to work right now, and they are going to be speaking shortly, actually. In the next few hours, they are going to be speaking. And today's the day. Nancy Pelosi set that artificial 48-hour deadline. It ends this afternoon. And apparently they are close. They are close on some of this language. There are a few little sticking points left, which is really around some of the coronavirus language. They're still narrowing that down. It doesn't appear, at least, that they're wide apart. There are some sources saying that they were on a conference call yesterday with Nancy Pelosi on the Democratic side, and there are still some caverns they have to fill, but they are in belief that they will get this done. Now, just remember that this is an artificial timeline set by Nancy Pelosi to get this done before the election. If it's not done before the election, all sides agree, and Wall Street seems to agree, and a number of Wall Street sources yesterday saying, our forecasts, our predictions based on our sourcing inside the White House and Congress is that there will be a massive stimulus coming. Now, whether or not it comes before Election Day, that's up in the air. But that there will be some kind of massive stimulus coming. And again, it might not come until June or January. Let's be frank here. Let's play this out a little bit. There will be a stimulus at some point. Just when, we don't know. Because things are getting worse right now in our economy, not better. All signs are pointing to worse, not better. So if Joe Biden wins, I think this is an accurate assessment. I saw this from Jeff Stein last night, basically saying that here's one scenario that I think is going to play out if we don't get a stimulus in the next 24 hours that we can sign off on before Election Day. That President Trump, if he loses, will be less inclined to really do anything, not wanting to work with anybody. I mean, can you imagine President Trump being conciliatory after Election Day if he loses? And he's going to want to work on any kind of a stimulus package? Doubtful. So therefore, this thing might not get pushed until, it would be pushed until maybe January, until Vice President Biden gets into office, if that happens. Now, if President Trump wins, he'd be buoyed to maybe get something done. Now he's got four more years. He doesn't care what you think. He'll do whatever he wants. There's that. But all signs seem to be pointing to if President Trump loses this, he's not going to be wanting to do anything. He's not going to want to come together on a bipartisan level and try to get something done after he gets his clock cleaned. He's a fairly vengeful person, as I think we've known, right? We've seen that. Oh, you just beat me? Sure, I'll shake your hand. No, that's not how he operates. So let's have fingers crossed today that Pelosi and Mnuchin are able to fill these gaps this afternoon on this sort of final phone call at the end of the sort of artificial 24-hour deadline set by Nancy Pelosi. But she's on to something, too, because if we work back from Election Day, 14 days, to get a bill drawn up, to have everyone come back to Washington, who's currently campaigning for themselves in re-election, have all of them come back to Washington, put it up for a vote, then go through the Senate, have it come out of committee in the Senate, then have a vote in the Senate, and then get handed off to President Trump, who's also campaigning, and have a signature signed before Election Day. Could happen. It has to happen, though, today or tomorrow, within the next 24 hours to get this done. So that's that. But let's look a little historically here now at whether or not this stimulus would actually even help anybody. You know, will anyone actually be helped by a broader stimulus? And we have history to look at here. We look at President Obama's stimulus. There's 9 different studies that I poured through over the past few days. In 2008, 2009, you'll recall, of course, President Obama elected during that, you know, catastrophe in the fall of that year. Remember, John McCain was canceling or suspending his campaign to go back to Washington to try to help with the economic catastrophe that unfolded. Obama at the time, senator, was saying, I'm going to keep campaigning because I want to win this election, and he did. Then, of course, George W. Bush is a lame duck at the time and dealing with this economic catastrophe in the housing crisis. What does he do? Basically, they kind of put together a plan that President Obama agrees on in this transition period to pass this stimulus. in the Treasury Department. They believe that the stimulus would work, and they pass this stimulus kind of right away after President Obama becomes president. And there were really, you know, and George W. Bush also had his stimulus in there. So there was kind of both of these. Did they actually work? Well, according to 9 different studies, yes. Some of it didn't, but a lot of it did. It turns out that it helped stave off unemployment. It helped the unemployment issue. Could have been much worse. And then it also had broader spillover into the broader economy. So other sectors of the economy were also helped. Well, this time it's been even bigger. And as we know, looking back historically at this data now, just over the past few months, since March, we know conclusively that the first stimulus helped. I mean, how many people watching right now were helped by that stimulus? A bipartisan stimulus, $1,200 in a stimulus payment, plus unemployment benefits, plus pandemic unemployment assistance, if you needed that. There were a bunch of things put in place that actually helped. And looking at some of the data, looking at UC Davis study, the stimulus checks to those with little cash in the bank resulted in 44.5% of the check going back into the economy within 10 days, which is exactly what they'd hoped would happen. And you can see the price, you know, the income difference here. Like if you make more than $100,000, people put that into savings. So you can see the people at the lower economic spectrum here spent it. They spent it on food, household items, medical care. They were not wasting this money. It was going right back into the economy for the things that they needed the most. Food, household items, bills, and rent. So yes, there is no question as to whether or not the stimulus worked. It did. 2008 and 2009, it did on a much smaller scale because it was a much smaller stimulus. This time, it's worked even more. There's, you know, broad consensus that we should pass another stimulus and get this money into the economy because this is the area that we're getting crushed in right now. It's GDP. And our federal government is not able to take in taxes to foot the bill for all of this money that's bailing out for big corporations. So if they can get more money into the hands of the American people, that will generate, help boost the economy, get this money cycling back into the system again, and help us to at least alleviate some of this revenue pain that the federal government is experiencing right now. Because the only, if you can see this, this is what we showed you yesterday, the federal debt. And just look at how much money is being spent, how much printing of money is happening. Here's 2008, 2009, and how much money is being spent or printed. And then just look at it skyrocketing here. Skyrocketing in the past few months. So it's not sustainable to be able to print this amount of money, but to not also have the American people be able to get some of this money so that it goes back into the economy in the form of a tax basis. You know, when you go to the store and buy something, guess what? Taxes. Well, the federal government is not bringing in taxes right now. It's being slammed. And this is what's happening in our broader economy. So the Federal Reserve is being asked about this federal digital currency. Federal Reserve Chief Jerome Powell speaking yesterday at the IMF about the FedNow digital currency. A lot of you have been asking, I see right now asking this morning, and if you're interested in this question, fire it up here in the chat. Will we move to a cashless society? I think it's inevitable. And I think all of the pieces are being put in place for a cashless society. We're seeing it now, you know, contactless payments, digital wallets, all of the major banks moving to digital wallets. In Europe, they've got, what is it, MBWay? The people just pay babysitters on MBWay. Canada, look at Canada. Everything is contactless. People don't carry cash. How many Canadians do we have watching today? Most Canadians I know, everything is set up with digital passport. The subway. Everything, just tap and go, no one carries cash. We're on the move. If you are new to our channel, please subscribe to the channel and smash that like button. It really helps us get our message out to a broader audience. YouTube says, you know, they look at that. They say, hey, if you gave them a thumbs up, we're going to share you more. And I think a lot of people could really use this financial education right now. It's the only way we can dig ourselves out of this hole. So thank you for liking and subscribing to the channel. So on this Fed digital currency question, how long until we see a Fed digital bank account where perhaps every American has its own bank account set up by the Federal Reserve? We are inching our way there. We're not yet there. There's still a lot of work to do on the infrastructure question. But China already has these pieces in place. China has already laid the groundwork for their tokenized currency. Would it be tied to blockchain? The answer is likely no. Could they work in tandem with other blockchain providers? Would it be a part of that? Perhaps. Would they do it fully on its own? Hard to say. But will we see the Federal Reserve setting up its own digital currency? Look, this power grab is already underway. The Federal Reserve's power is mounting by the day, folks. People have been scared about this, worried about this over the years. It's coming. Fed Chief Jerome Powell was asked about this yesterday. They've already done a ton of work on this. Here's what Jerome Powell had to say yesterday about the FedNow digital currency. How close are we to seeing this?
We have not made a decision to issue a CBDC, and we think that there's a great deal of work yet to be done, as well as extensive public consultation to be had with all stakeholders before making such a decision. The dollar is the world's principal reserve currency, as you pointed out, and I assure you that we will be approaching this question with great care.
One of the care pieces is to make sure that there's enough public hearings on this. We're going to have all these discussions about it. It's going to be out there publicly. But it's coming. We've already seen during this pandemic where we've had a lack of coins. There's been a lack of actual physical money in circulation because no one was putting coins, 25 cent pieces, five dime pennies into the system. And so this lack of movement of currency, people were saying basically, hey, bring your coins in. Like if you're going to go to the store, just bring, do you have a big jar of pennies you can bring in? Really? So bizarre, because everyone's going cashless. I hate carrying cash. I never have it on me. Literally, I'm looking at my wallet right now and I have no cash. But then, you know, the question is, well, what happens if everything breaks down and collapses? It's a great question, because well, I'll tell you what happens. We all revert back to the things we know for 4,000 years, precious metals. That's why so many people are buying gold right now and silver. And frankly, Bitcoin. People are sitting on these digital currencies. People are sitting on these precious metals. And frankly, people are sitting on real estate. And art as well. I'm not an art collector, but that is one thing that always through thousands of years has sustained. Art, precious metals, real estate. Those three things. High-end art. I'm not talking about the run-of-the-mill, flavor of the month. I'm talking like the that has sustained for thousands of years. I don't own any of it. The only kind of art I end up having is like the stuff I get at IKEA, you know? I know I like art, but I wouldn't know how to collect it. So we had Anthony Pompliano. We sat down with him last night in our Financial Freedom Academy, which is our private group for people who want to take their finances to the next level. And a lot of our Financial Freedom Academy members have been asking about crypto and getting a better understanding of Bitcoin and where we are with this. We asked Anthony this specific question about a digital Fed currency and how close are we to seeing it? What would the underlying technology look like? Anthony's a very smart guy. So here was Anthony's answer on cryptocurrency.
But now what you're seeing is some central banks. So China, the People's Bank of China has stepped in. They've created a kind of a, they call it a digital currency, but it's essentially a tokenized version. It does not use a blockchain, right? They do not want decentralized things. They want centralized things in China. And so they've got kind of a database system that has a digital currency that they control. And they're now testing. So they've not only built it, but they've actually have it in production testing it. In terms of the US, just today, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell gave a talk at the IMF, and he talked about kind of the U.S. coming up with one of these central bank digital currencies. Again, won't be based on a blockchain, but has kind of their own version or technology stack. What I ultimately think will happen is every fiat currency in the world will be digitized or tokenized by their central bank. What that is, what that's going to do, though, that's very interesting, is it will eliminate any competition on the technology layer. So whether it's Bitcoin, the digital dollar, a digital yuan, a digital euro, whatever it is, they'll all be digital. So you can put all of them in your digital wallet. They'll kind of have feature parity from a technology standpoint. What that will do, though, is that will then push up and say, okay, the competition is going to play out at the monetary policy layer. And when that happens, all the fiat currencies are the same. Sure, they compete with each other on interest rates or how much money is printed or whatever, but they're all inflationary currencies. Bitcoin is a deflationary currency. And so when you kind of systematize or reduce the friction of switching between all these different currencies because they use the same technology, now what my belief is that capital is going to flow into the deflationary type structures as a store of value. And if you want to come out of that to, let's say, pay your taxes or buy something, you'll just, with a click of a button, be able to switch from store of value to a medium of exchange type asset in the short term. Over the long term, the store of value will become the medium of exchange.
So this is fascinating. Deflationary currency, folks. And the reason that this is so powerful is because if you've got currency that's not tied to, you know, that can't be manipulated, the idea is, can we not have something that's manipulated? And when you look at the way the federal government prints money, this is manipulation, folks. Look at this. I mean, when you see how much money they're printing, how can inflation not go up? I mean, how can we not have inflation? They just can keep printing money. And inflation's at around 1.8%. Something is not right. I mean, this is why I keep talking about a collapse coming, folks. I mean, so what I'm saying is the value of a paper dollar today is worth less tomorrow. And it's only going to get worse. So the real questions, we still have a lot of questions as to how this digital Fed currency would be administered. You know, would we be able to just print more of it, be able to create more of it? The idea is that, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the government wants to be able to print it whenever they can or mine it whenever they want. That's different than Bitcoin. So you might have like your digital wallet with a federal currency in it, and you might also have your digital wallet with Bitcoin. So one has an inflation, you know, it's tied to inflation going up, right? It's worth less. And then you have Bitcoin that's not, we know exactly how much is in circulation. And it's not, you know, therefore it can't be manipulated at the state level. You can't have this money that's manipulated by the federal government. That's what these central governments don't like about it. They don't like that they can't touch it. Because even if one server goes offline in Thailand somewhere, it's decentralized. It's not in any one state. It's not sitting in Sweden. It's not sitting in Finland. Bitcoin has, you know, servers and technology spread all over the globe. You couldn't stop it if you wanted to. People's currency. You know, the writing is on the wall with this. And yes, it, as we talked about last night with Anthony, it's much more volatile right now. It's less in circulation than we have with other currencies. And therefore, it's going to present itself as more volatile. But the future is coming. This Fed digital currency is coming. China's already doing it. And our federal government has been having meeting after meeting after meeting on it and laying out exactly how this is going to unfold. And the thing with the Fed is they want to pretend that they're not really driving this conversation. They want to say, well, we want to have as many public meetings as possible. We want to, but they've already laid the framework for this. Make no mistake about it. It's already there. And I believe perhaps our next president, whoever's the next president of the United States, in the next 4, 6, even 8 years, in that time frame, we are going to see this Fed digital currency roll out. How long until we are a cashless society? In many ways, we already are. In many ways, we already are. I wonder what this is going to do to the mob. It's a good question, right? One of the fascinating things about organized crime with like digital currency is that there's three layers of accounting, three lines of accounting. So what's interesting is that, you know, hundreds of years ago, when you would go and buy a good or a service, right, you would go and trade your hat for seed, you know, and there would be an accounting of it, right? Clayton bought seed and he traded the hats that he makes, right? One line on accounting. And then we move to two-line accounting or two-way accounting, where we're basically checking our books every quarter and we're doing that back and forth. Now with Bitcoin, it's three layers, which is basically almost like having a shared spreadsheet, like a shared Google document with somebody else, a third party. So you and I sell my Bitcoin to you. You and I each have an accounting of it. And also this third party source has an accounting of it, to which I joke, imagine if our presidents of the United States were using Bitcoin, then we wouldn't have to ask them for their tax returns or any of that, right? Because we would already have an accounting of it. It's all digital. It's all right there. It's non-manipulatable. And that's why this is so amazing, because we're moving in this direction. People worry about, you know, to me, it's like, it seems like a fake currency. Really? Look around. That dollar that you have in your pocket right now is a fake currency. It's worth nothing. It's tied to the federal government, which is printing money like this. That dollar in your pocket you think is worth, is better, you're better off with that dollar than a Bitcoin or a gold coin or a silver coin? Come on, man. No way. No way. So smash that like button if you'd be so kind. Subscribe to the channel. We also write about this in our daily morning newsletter, which is morninginvest.com. We talk about all of the business news that I think is important to the average person. So please subscribe to that daily newsletter. It's totally free. You can read it in about 5 minutes over your morning cup of coffee. I've got a little iced coffee this morning. Grover likes to join me. In fact, I shared a picture here on YouTube yesterday of how when I'm writing the newsletter in the morning, along with my beautiful wife, Grover just sits on my lap while I'm writing the newsletter. So he's my little writing companion first thing in the morning. Check in on the chat here for a second. Man, this, you got your newsletter today? Doo-wop lover. HP, okay, thank you so much. Daquan Brown says, someone bought a mansion with a QR code, nothing fake about Bitcoin. Yeah, the only downside, there's a couple of downsides about it. It's that, as Anthony was talking about last night, you know, one of the downsides about cryptocurrency is the speed with which transactions takes place. And because you're paying tax on every transaction, it's not like something that you're going to, you know, be using to go buy a soda somewhere yet. Although the government's working on this and regulators are working on this for maybe smaller purchase of items, but because it's expensive. And so a lot of people who have Bitcoin, as Anthony pointed out, it's more of an incentive to hold on to this currency than it is to spend it. Because the time it takes for the transaction to take place, it's basically they're leaning on security over speed. You know, you could do thousands of transactions a second, right? Visa handles like 60,000 transactions a second. Bitcoin handles 3 per second. So, you know, and then that's how the blockchain works. Like every 10 minutes, the blockchain gets all this in its, you know, and then those are the next transactions that happen. So it takes a while. And the amount of energy that's burned by a blockchain, by mining this technology, it's expensive. So, you know, the speed isn't there, but it's interesting. Like to buy a house, that might be a purchase where you would use crypto, because it's one time. You're not doing like these little small transactions where you're being taxed every time. If your cryptocurrency, Mr. Peace and Liberty says, if your cryptocurrency is so much better than my dollar, then why would you accept my dollar for your cryptocurrency? That's a great question. I mean, well, the dollar still exists, but what you're doing is you're trading that dollar that day for the value of that Bitcoin. So I'm converting this dollar, which is losing value every day, into a digital currency, which is going up. So I would be, you know, if I could, that's what I would want to do, is convert that into gold and silver, right, into a stable currency. Now, yes, you're going to have some ups and downs and whatever value we place on that. But at least it's our value. The federal government can print as much of it as they want, therefore debasing the currency. That's what the federal government does, and it debases the currency. Cryptocurrency can't be debased because it's not run by any one country. You know, I just would encourage all of you not to run out and start buying Bitcoin today, but to really start paying attention to this and not laughing about it. Start thinking about it as a part of our conversation now. When you have the Federal Reserve building their own tokenized version of it, and China's already done it, this has moved beyond just like coffee table chat with friends over, you know, at a pub. This is mainstream. And it's going to be coming to your wallet in the next few years, whether you like it or not. So just get ready for it. Just get ready for it. I'll take more of your questions in a moment. Let's talk about real estate. Should you stop investing in real estate? Because some troubling signs are on the horizon. If you're new to the channel, welcome. Go ahead and smash that like button. We help you become more intelligent around your finances. This is a show for the 99%, not the Wall Street crowd. We help you navigate these crazy financial times and make you a more intelligent investor. So thank you so much for subscribing and smashing that like button. There are a couple of worrying signs right now on the horizon in the housing market that you should be paying attention to. Now, this is from a real estate investor perspective. We already know and have established well what's going on inside the larger economy with evictions rising, people unable to pay their mortgages. That is one major piece of this. Defaults that are going to be coming specifically in the commercial sector. All you need to do is look at those retail spaces, those little strip malls that you used to go and stop at the Dunkin' Donuts or the framing store or to get your hems altered on your pants. Those are going vacant. But it's clear as day that those are in trouble. And banks that hold those mortgages are now having to foreclose. Those companies are going out of business. They can't pay those mortgages. And there's no stimulus to pay for it. So we know all of that. That's like 30,000 foot level, what's going on more broadly. But what's happening at the tenant level where rents are due? What's happening in the apartment complexes? What's happening in those old are those big houses that people bought that are now not able to pay the mortgages? What's going to happen to those? And what's happening in certain cities across the country that you might have thought you would invest in or that you already have invested in? There are some troubling numbers this morning. And all you need to do is look at, I think it's reminiscent of this Piketty book. I don't know how many of you read that a few years ago. It was really a landmark book, Capital in the 21st Century. One of the things that Thomas Piketty talks about in that book is this idea of the dirty mansions. And what happened a number of years ago is this debt-driven economic boom that built these large-scale family mansions back in the early 20th century. Now, I used to live in the state of New Jersey. Got out of there. By the way, did you see the news this morning that New Jersey is the least liked state? It's the most hated state in the United States. I'll read you that story a little bit later. But a couple of things happened over the past 100 years, and it's happening again right now. So it's worth looking at these cycles. And again, I was a history major, so if you're not paying attention to these cycles, you're doomed to repeat them. Well, it's coming around again. I'm gonna illustrate here on my handy whiteboard exactly how this works. So I've got my handy iPad here. And I want to show you what happened back in the early part of the 20th century is exactly what's happening again right now. So if you just look at some of these houses, these are some of the examples of these large kind of older mansion brick homes that you might look at and say, wow, is that a duplex? And the reason you might say, hey, is that a duplex or are multiple families living in this house is because that's what happened a number of years ago. That's what happened after the Spanish flu of 1918, after the last huge pandemic. A lot of these beautiful old brick homes and big mansions in the cities, you know, in Cleveland and parts of New Jersey and Chicago and other places, they got converted into multifamily homes. But they didn't start out that way. They started out as beautiful big mansions where one family lived in it because it had access to transportation. The train station was right there, schooling, food, shopping, all of those things in those little downtown areas. Well, interesting that a lot of those people who lost their jobs, got priced out of those areas, couldn't afford those mortgages anymore, got forced out further into the suburbs. And then what happened after the pandemic in 1918? Another debt boom worked basically to reverse that whole situation. And then many of those same buildings were remodeled and they were turned into multifamily housing. So you had a lot of families moving into those areas. So then what happened is a lot of those people were able to move into, like they moved out after the pandemic, they moved out of those populated areas. A lot of those rich people, they're like, hey, we're out of here. You know, we're going to move out of this area. We've got money now. We're going to move out of this area. And that's exactly what's happening right now. So all these rich people that are in these big cities, that are in these big mansions, now are fleeing those areas and they're moving out into the suburbs. And that's why you're seeing bidding wars unfolding up in places like the Catskills, the Adirondacks, going to Camden, Maine. Camden, Maine, their real estate market is exploding right now. This is all happening. Again, right, same thing. I mean, it's like history repeating itself right after the pandemic of 1918. And so for lower income individuals, they're seeing those style houses saying, well, now I can actually move closer to the train station because that rich guy left. Now his big house, his big McMansion right by the train station, I could move in here if only I could maybe split the cost with somebody. And that's what's happening all over again. So let me go to my little chart here and kind of explain what I'm seeing. So this is what happened. You know, at the early part of the 20th century, you know, step one was you had these big, just doing this to me. Forgive my terrible drawing. I don't know why it's giving me a, there we go. So you had these big houses and one family lived in the big house. And then the flu hits 1918. And you had that same big house. What happened is these people left, they got out. They fled. They went to the countryside. And then two or three families moved into these houses and they got converted. Now those families could live more closely to the train station. The same thing happened in the London Plague of 1665. The rich left for those less populated, larger, greener spaces. So again, in 1665, it happened. It happened in 1918. And now guess what? It's happening now. Again, history repeating itself. So what's happening now? What happened is that these houses, then people started slowly trickling back to them in the 1960s and 70s. Change the color here so you can see what I'm doing. So they started coming back. And they started converting them back from 2 and 3 bedroom houses again into one. Good thing I went on a teacher, right? So they converted them back into a one-family house again. Because you know what? The rich people, they wanted to be by the train stations, by the downtown area, wanted to be in the cozy little quaint, you know, train village like Maplewood, New Jersey, where a single-family house of this size is, you know, over $1 million, $1.5, $1.8 million, right? So they moved back. So now they're back in this home. Well, guess what's happening again? Yes, 2020 hit. And coronavirus. And so now they're leaving again. And now the same house is being converted back again into 2 and 3 family homes all over again. And this is happening time and time again. As Gary Schilling points out in his October report, which is subscription only, by the way, apartment, condo, and commercial vacancies right now are down 15 to 20% in hard-hit areas like New York, San Francisco, Condo rental prices fell 17% in bigger cities. We have a surge right now in supply for these areas, like in New York City. Redfin reports that the median U.S. condo sale price fell 14% in June from a year earlier. New York City, those high-end condo sale prices have fallen by more than 40%. So what you're seeing in these big cities is these people flee, they're being pushed out into the suburbs. So should this scare you? Should this stop you from investing in real estate? And the answer I always give to people that want to know, you know, is now a good time to invest in real estate? The answer is no, this shouldn't scare you. You just need to be smarter with where you're buying. So I'm not a person who would ever invest in one of those big cities for this very reason, the volatility, where these huge price swings. Yes, you can make a lot of money if you were one of these condo speculators that went into New York City and built these high-rise condos because you were seeing what was happening. Then you overbuilt and now they're sitting there vacant. You have, 40% price drop just to get these things filled. It's what happened in Miami. You know, people don't learn from history. San Francisco, Toronto, Vancouver. So no, those bubble areas, I'm not investing. The areas that I am investing, though, are areas, you know, outside of big cities. So West Texas, in fact, we just bought a rental property just in the last week. So no, I continue to invest in real estate because people need a place to live, and we have an affordable housing in this housing crisis in this country. So why would I be investing in that type of a property where you're going to see huge price swings? You're going to see huge rent disparities. I want areas where people can get a good job. There's low vacancy. There are Fortune 500 companies moving to that area where taxes are strong. Taxes are great for families, where the jobs and the median income are higher. That's where you want to be looking to invest, that are sort of insulated from these crazy swings in the marketplace right now. So again, I come back to Gary Schilling's October report that commercial vacancies are leaping right now. And these apartment condo places are leaping right now. And these rents are dropping in those areas because they can. They're having trouble filling it. You know, it's good news for renters who want to get into some of those cheaper areas in some of the cities. But the opportunities now are also leaving. So this is part of the problem. This is part of the cycle. As the opportunities and the jobs and the businesses leave, the rents go down. Why would they want to move there? There's no job. I mean, you might want to move there if you're able to work remotely. So renters could see this as an opportunity, perhaps, to get a cheaper place to rent. And if they're working remotely, now the city might become the place where they'd want to live. They can live in the city for cheaper than they ever could and still work remotely from home. And it might be an opportunity. So I always try to look for the opportunities here. We haven't, you know, the bottom hasn't completely fallen out yet. We don't know how this is going to shape up over the next few months. And again, if there is some sort of larger, broader stimulus package at play that could help this, could keep these businesses from going under, could help rent landlords from having to, you know, to be able to pay these bills, rental assistance also. We don't know the full scope of this yet. But these are some of the signs that we're seeing right now and the switch of these dirty mansions. It's a fascinating read. I would encourage everyone, if you haven't had a chance to pick up this book, go check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's dense, it's heavy, but it's one of the most important books over the last few years. It's thick, it's 816 pages, but very important stuff to be able to swallow here. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well. We have more news coming up here this morning. Anybody have any questions about that in the chat, feel free to drop them in here. Cressy wants to know, is the stimulus package going to pass today? We don't know. Not pass. It's not going to pass today. We could finally get a framework today, in which case it would be written up into an actual bill. Then the House would vote on it. They'd have to fly back to Washington over the next few days, vote on it. Then it would be sent to the Senate. Then it will go through committee in the Senate, then go to the Senate floor, if Mitch McConnell allows it, where then it would be voted upon in the Senate. Then, if it's agreed upon in the Senate, it would go to President Trump's desk for him to sign it. All of that, if we want, before Election Day, needs to happen within 14 days. Gail Briggs says, Clayton, I could not be a landlord. Some tenants are a nightmare. No, just no. Yes, but yes, I've had nightmare tenants. But when you have a property management company that screens tenants properly, does full background checks on the tenant, then you mitigate that risk. I mean, I have property management companies that manage my properties. So I don't do it. And I don't encourage anybody who learns about real estate investing from me to manage their own properties. So you remove that nightmare. You know, I've definitely had nightmare tenants because I did it wrong back years ago when I was starting. Antoinette Bigum, thank you for your super chat. My husband is an excavator in the housing developments in Columbus, Ohio. They are little houses going for $750,000 plus. They are flying off the shelf. Exactly. We had a house in one of our markets that we bought, I think we bought it years ago for like $26,000. That whole area is being completely remodeled. And the houses are now selling in the like $300,000, $400,000 range. And we bought it for $26,000. I bought a couple of them in that same neighborhood. Jacqueline Howard says, I bet other countries study us in school what not to do. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Although look at Europe right now. Europe is surging past the United States in coronavirus cases. Italy going under lockdown again. France also going under lockdowns. The UK going under lockdown. Here's a little nugget. I didn't realize this. Do you know Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of England, was born in the United States? Did you know that? I didn't. I learned that yesterday. G Rep says the idea of buying multiple houses is beyond comprehension for me. It was for me too. You know, I grew up with no money. I had $75,000 in debt. I had a 580 credit score. I mean, I had credit card debt that would have made your head swim. I was below the poverty line. I grew up with a lot of negative associations about money. You know, money doesn't grow on trees. We're not the Rockefellers. We can't afford that. I heard it over and over and over. I was scared of money all the time. I was making like $23,000 a year and I had $75,000 in debt. So tomorrow on the show, I want to talk about helping you get out of debt. I want to give you my framework for helping you get out of debt. We'll do that on the show tomorrow. I was going to get to it today. I've written tons of notes on it, but we'll do it on the show tomorrow. Okay. And I'll talk you through that process. It's not even just about debt. It's about your mindset. Because even if you get out of debt and you still fear money, you still don't think that it's worth it, that you are worth it. I got news for you. You are. Every one of you watching right now is worth it. Every one of you watching right now has the ability to build wealth. And I'm not even talking about wealth like, you know, Jeff Bezos' wealth. I mean, what is wealth? To me, it's just not fearing money. It's just knowing that every month you've got enough money to pay your bills, to cover all of your expenses, and that you don't have to sweat about it every month. That's it. That's all that we want, right? So that is wealth to me. It's being able to have that freedom to spend time with your children, not be worried about money all the time, how you're going to put food on the table. I grew up with that. And in my 20s and into my 30s, it wasn't until my 30s that I would journal about it every morning and really work on getting my mindset right around money. So that's my goal with this channel, is to help you get there also. Educate you around your finances. You know, if you're taking time out of your morning to learn about the financial system, you, my friends, watching right now are far ahead of the game. There are other people that are just flipping around the internet right now and they're like, I'm going to flip off of this. I want to go watch a gaming show, a gaming channel. You are learning about the federal government. You're learning about your finances. You're learning about how politics affects your wallet. You're learning about monetary policy. I never knew this stuff when I was a kid. I had to learn it. So what I bring to you on this channel is 20 years of hard knocks learning, you know, investing in real estate, buying properties, renovating properties, going through foreclosure, having massive debt, all of those things. That's the school of hard knocks. That's how you learn. And so what I'm trying to do is bring that to you here on the channel. So don't be discouraged, you know, get there. Anita, thank you so much for your super chat. Says Clayton, how is it a seller's market when buyers are broke? Landlords are charging very high rent and evicting left and right. It is true, but if you just heard my report, rents are going down in a lot of the major metropolitan areas right now. We're seeing about a 15 to 20% drop. And prices are coming down in a lot of those major metropolitan areas. New York, Miami, Chicago, Vancouver, San Francisco. Now, I don't invest in those areas. I've always warned my audience to not invest in those areas. I invest in areas outside of those big cities with very little volatility. But it is a seller's market in a lot of the country. You know, most people think, and this is what I think a lot of people forget, is that most of America doesn't live in New York City, you know? So it is a seller's market because there's still a lot of people that have money. And mortgages are so cheap to get right now. Interest rates are so low that it's helping to fuel this purchasing of homes and refinances, et cetera. So it's a great question. Landlords in some areas are still, they're going to, you know, their reckoning is coming. But like where I have my properties, we haven't raised rents at all. I mean, I don't raise our rents. We had somebody in our property who left after like 3-4 years, and then we did a tenant turnover. We fixed up the walls. We did a whole bunch of new work on the property, and that rent was different, but still well below the cost of a mortgage, which is what we're going to talk about next, actually. John Shank says, Clayton, do you have any houses in Maryland? Because as soon as I clear all my loans, I'd love to get one of your turnkey properties. No, we don't do Maryland for investing, but if you're interested in investing in where we do our properties, it's mostly Texas, because the tax benefits, you know, just, you can't beat it, quite honestly. So yeah, but when you're ready for that, John, let us know. Love to help you. Hey, Felix just became a channel member. Thank you so much, Felix. I love your avatar, by the way. Grover loves it too. Kind of looks like him a little bit. All right, let's talk about this. I had a, we'll get you out of here on time so no one gets hurt today. How about that? And I don't want to avoid more complex subjects on this show because, you know, I want to try to provide some context for them and help us through them, some of the more complex investing strategies and things that really affect you and your family, because it's so important. So I don't want us to be scared of some complex discussions and topics on this show. So, get my notes up here. Got this question on mortgages from one of our viewers. It's an interesting question. I think a lot of you probably can relate to this very question during this pandemic, you know, having your salary slashed, not being able to afford the house that you're currently living in. So we got this message from Mary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, my alma mater city, University of Pittsburgh. Mary says, my husband and I earn about $5,300 a month right now. Our mortgage is about $2,400 per month. What should we do to start investing? Thank you for the question, Mary. Now, I just want to say on the surface, I'm excited that you want to invest. You want to think about your family's future, but we have a more immediate problem in your hands right now. And that is the fact that, does anybody watching right now, can anyone tell me in the chat below, what is Mary's issue? I'm going to put her question back up here again. See if you guys can solve what the issue is right now for Mary, just based on it's like a word problem. It's just what, you know, these data points, can you figure out what Mary's overall issue is right now? My husband and I earn about $5,300 a month right now. Our mortgage is $2,400 a month. What should we do to start investing? Okay. Anyone in the chat want to tackle this question? Who is Mary? Someone who wrote to us. Well, income, the mortgage ratio. Yes. Good answer. Income to mortgage ratio. Shonda M says mortgage is high relative to her income. Very good. Kimberly Cunningham, income mortgage ratio. Jody Truitt, her mortgage is too high. Exactly. So a good rule of thumb, one that try to follow, is that your mortgage and frankly your rent should never be more than 25% of your take home pay. Now I get the problem right now for a lot of renters is that The cost of rent has gone up, continued to go up, and their wages haven't. And this is why we have an affordable housing crisis in this country. First of all, we don't have enough inventory, and then we have an incredible amount of, you know, fighting, bidding wars going on to get certain apartments and houses right now because there's not enough. We have no inventory. But that's not the problem for her. They have a house. They're living in this house. The problem for Mary, and I know from her message, is that they went from like a two-family income down to basically one during this pandemic, and they lost a significant portion of their income. So over the past year or the past 9 or 8 months, they've been dealing with this loss in income, and they've been skating by. So Mary's issue, they're making $5,300 a month. Their mortgage is, you know, $2,500 a month. Of course, the rule of thumb is you want to be about 25% of your take-home pay for a mortgage or rent, because then you're able to at least live, pay your groceries, have some entertainment, pay a car payment, etc. But the problem is that she is house poor. I mean, I hate to say it, but the change in circumstances caused this to happen. So she and her husband right now are house poor. They have no savings. The problem is that what happens if that changes even slightly more? What if their hours get cut even more during this pandemic? What if we don't get some sort of additional stimulus and Mary and her husband now can't pay that additional money? And now they won't be able, that's, you know, not going to be able to afford groceries or to pay that utility bill now that we're heading into colder parts of the year. So the heating prices are going to go up. All of these things need to be looked at in a budget. So how do you not become house poor? Well, there's one thing you can do right now. We've got our free financial freedom boot camp that we built, my wife and I. It's totally free, and it's a 90-day boot camp. So Mary, if you're watching, please download it. It's totally free, and I really believe it can help you get your financial house in order. Follow it week by week. Just go to morninginvest.com/bootcamp, download it, totally free. We put months of work into this for people like you who need to get their financial house in order. That's step one. Step two is ask yourself the question, you know, is this income going to stay the same for the next few months? Do you see a point at which, you know, you or your husband are going to receive higher wages or the hours will be increased? Have you been told by your boss, your place of employment, hey, starting in November, starting in December, we're going to be back up to 40 hours per week. Therefore, your income will go back up. And therefore, your house payment will be about 25% of your broader income. If you know those answers, great. But if you don't see any sign that that's going to change, then the reality is this. You are house poor. Right now, you're at about 50% of your take-home pay is going to a house payment. That is no way to live. That means you have no money going into investing strategies. You're not able to do the things that we teach you here on the show, which is to invest in real estate or buy precious metals or even cryptocurrency as a hedge against this inflationary growth that we're seeing, or this inflationary period that we're seeing from our federal government. Again, I come back to the amount of money that the federal government is printing. We are heading for an inflation. We're heading for an increased inflationary period in this country. Could be years where your dollar is going to even get you less amount of, you know, it's going to actually pay you less. Your dollar is going to be worth less in the coming months. The Fed has already admitted as much. The Fed chief, Jerome Powell, has already said that we are going to allow inflation to run hot to make up for the periods where we've kept it below 2%. Well, it's below 2%. And they're going to let it run hot for almost as long a period as they've kept it under 2%. That means we could be up to 3, even 3.5% inflation for years. Meaning your $2,500 mortgage payment or your $5,300 a month that you're bringing in for take-home pay, Mary, is going to be worth less in cash. It's not going to go as far. So you need a strategy. As the federal government continues to print money, and I show this chart all the time, and I'm going to continue to show it, look here in 2020. That's the amount of additional debt, the additional amount of money that the federal government has printed. And it's not gotten that debt off of its balance books since 2008, 2009. It's still carrying that amount of debt. You can't keep printing money and not expect inflation to go up. That's just what's going to happen. So your money is going to be worth less, which means you need to have assets that are worth more than inflation. You need to have real estate that's producing monthly cash flow. But before we get there, what can we do in your immediate situation? Do you need to stay in this house? That'd be a question I would ask you. Do you have to stay there? Is it mandatory that you stay there? Most Americans right now have equity in their homes. The good news is that prices in housing keep going up, and bidding wars are breaking out all over the country. That means your house is probably worth more than you know. The average American right now has about $6,000 to $9,000 of equity in their home, which is good. I mean, it means you can sell the house and make a little profit, but many Americans have a lot more equity than that. So you might be sitting on equity in this house right now. You might be able to refinance this house. You might be able to lower your overall payment, pull out some of that equity. That's one option. Again, I'm not a financial advisor, so please seek your own financial advisor help on this. But if this were my situation, I'd be looking at, okay, can I reduce my overall payment right now by tapping into some of my equity? That might be an option. A better option, though, might be to downsize, to consider downsizing this house. Do you need this large house at $2,300 a month? And if you downsize, when you sell that house, would you be able to take some of that profit and put it into an investment strategy? Just imagine for a second, if you had $50,000 in equity, $60,000, you sell that house, now you've got $60,000 in cash from the closing that you could use as a down payment to buy an investment property. Yeah, $30,000, $40,000 would all you would be needing really to get a really solid investment house and then have financing on top of it. So that is a down payment. Now that property is bringing you $15,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month in cash flow as an investment. Now, where do you live? That's the next question. I would rent. Remember, the house you live in is not a performing asset, which is why I really hesitate to the refinance idea, because now you're refinancing into something that's still not a performing asset. You know, unless you're renting out part of your house to somebody as in the form of a duplex or something like that. But, I will argue to the cows come home. The house you live in is not a performing asset. Remember, a performing asset is something that puts cash into your pocket every month. A liability is something that takes cash out of your pocket every month. And that's what owning a property is when you live in it with no tenants in that property. You're paying property taxes. You're having to fix the garage when it breaks. You are having to fix it. You're having to go to Home Depot and paint the walls. You're having to replace the furnace, the roof, the landscaping, the plumbing. All of that is you. It's not a performing asset. Now, if you have equity in that home, you can kind of turn that into a performing asset by tapping some of that equity, selling the house, or even getting a home equity line of credit where you could pull some of that equity out and buying a rental property to start producing that cash flow. So you don't have a money problem. You have an idea problem. How can you reposition what those assets that you currently have, that house you're sitting in right now, if it has equity, pull some of that out. Think about how you could reposition that into a performing asset. And then rent the house where you live. Go rent. Find a great place in maybe the same school district where you need to be for your kids. Rent, probably at a much cheaper rate than you're going to find in a mortgage. You might have to downsize. You know, if one of you lost their job in this pandemic, that's a reality that we have to face, that we might need to downsize. No, I don't own the place where I live. I rent. Because that's what I believe. I believe that you should allow your investments to provide the life that you want. And that's what I try to teach all of you. I'm not saying owning a house is terrible, but I'm just saying if you're in this position right now, you should really consider moving, downsizing, or repositioning some of that equity into cash flow. Because now imagine if you had that cash flow goes from $5,300 a month. Now you're adding an additional $2,000 to $3,000 in cash flow from a rental property on top of that. How does that change things? Changes it a lot, doesn't it? So we can begin to, and think about, you might even have a 401k that you could tap into right now under the CARES Act, pull out some of that money. You can bring out up to about $100,000 right now out of your 401k. You might want to be able to use that as a defined investment property or to pay off the remaining balance on your mortgage if you can. That would alleviate that additional $2,300 in pain every month. So a bunch of different areas that you can go into, but I don't want you to think that you just have to sit there on this and not be able to invest for the next 10 years because your 50% of your income is going towards your mortgage. That's just a sad state of affairs. So I'm sorry to hear that, but hopefully on the show, we can help you get there. So if you have any questions like this, drop them in the chat below. Any comments you have, we'll feature them here on the show. One thing you can really do to help our show, though, is to smash that like button, because when YouTube sees that you smash that like button, it sends it out to more people. And when you subscribe to the channel and you share it on Facebook or you share it with a loved one who might need to hear this, it really helps us out a lot to get this financial education out to more people. So thank you so much for your support. And don't forget to download the bootcamp. Just go to morninginvest.com/bootcamp. It's how you can get the 90-day bootcamp. It's totally free. And you'll go through week by week by week. Get a notepad out and sit down with your spouse, your loved one, and go through it step by step by step in order to start building financial freedom. That's the goal. So let's open it up here in the chat a little bit. Allison Morgan says, my rent is $900 for a dump with no laundry room. Sorry to hear that. Florida rent is off the charts, Triode says. Connie Hawkins says, what would be the tax on your 401k if you take it out right now? Well, the thing is, you need to talk with your company, because under the CARES Act, you are now able to take out up to $100,000 without penalty. You have to, though, provide the fact that you're in a hardship situation. You have to prove, you have to just basically admit, like, hey, during COVID, I can't pay my bills. Remember, it's your money. Your 401k is your money. So just talk with your financial person at work. Ask them about the new provisions in the CARES Act and how it relates to your situation. But I think if I'm not mistaken, it defers the taxes for like 5 years, I think. I'll have to check into it again. Evelyn says, is it legal to buy a home through an LLC and rent it to yourself? Yes. I would encourage you to read Garrett Sutton's great book called Loopholes of Real Estate. He's an attorney. He's a friend. He's a rich dad advisor, by the way. One of the things he talks about in the book is, like, if you have a duplex, the only way you can really do it, though, is you can't do it. Well, let me be careful here. You can't do it if it's a single family home. You can't buy it in an LLC and then rent it to yourself and then try to get tax benefits that way. That's not legal. But you can buy a duplex in an LLC and live in one side of the duplex and rent the other side of the duplex to somebody else. That's called house hacking. And it's a great way to get started in real estate investing. Because now that tenant next door is basically paying your entire mortgage and you're living there for free. So house hacking is a great way to get started with real estate investing. I've got a full video on my real estate channel. Anybody who's interested in real estate investing specifically, I have my other channel, which is just youtube.com/MorrisInvest, my last name, Morris. And I have a whole house hacking video over there, the ultimate guide to house hacking. So again, it's just youtube.com/MorrisInvest is my other YouTube channel. And we only talk about real estate investing on that channel. Demetria Middleton, I've never had to pay for anything. He fixes our cars too. Sorry, I must have missed your first point. Tony Joslin says, how can I join that Facebook group? Well, we have it's our Financial Freedom Academy course and membership. So when you are a member of the course, you get access to our private Facebook group. So if you want to learn more about it, just financialfreedomacademy.com. Bobby V says, I'd rather be in a warmer climate than here in Michigan. How is rent in Arizona or around that part of the country? I don't know about rents in Arizona off the top of my head. I know like in Florida or like Jacksonville, you can get some pretty affordable places to rent. You know, a lot in Florida, Orlando and other spots are kind of a little overpriced. Like Jacksonville, you know, you're not having to pay the exorbitant money for heating bills and everything because just, you know, doesn't get cold. So way to go. I saw someone says, yeah, Kevin Wu, $30,000 down house price with $2,000 to $3,000 in cash flow. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, that's what my company does at Morris Invest, where we build houses like that. Anita Dry says, what is your link for Outlet? Can we put that up on the screen, Philip? If you want to sign up for Outlet, get 6% interest. There you go. Morninginvest.com/outlet. There's a gnat flying around in here. I hope you found this helpful today. Drop any, you know, if you have, the chat kind of disappears after the show. So once this is live and the stream has ended, you'll be able to write a comment in the chat below. If you have any financial related questions, include them in the comments below, and I'll try to pull them like I did Mary's, and we'll try to include them here on the show. So Mary sent me a question, and look, this has been a great segment because I think this can help so many people. Is Outlet for all states? Yeah, there's still some exclusions. I'll talk to the owners of Outlet and find out. They are working on some. There was New York. New York has extra layers of regulation. I think Texas, Tennessee. There might have been four of them that they're not in. Rowena wants to know how Outlet works. Well, you can deposit and withdraw your money at any time. It's a savings account alternative. And it works because let's say you deposit $100 into your savings account with Outlet, they then lend that money out in the crypto market, but it's insured, and they are able to lend it out because crypto, it trades higher. So they're basically able to get you a 6% return by lending this out with Ethereum. So all you need to do to check it out, just go to morninginvest.com/outlet and read more about how it works. It's all there on their website. Yeah, don't mention the Eagles to me right now. So I just saw someone in the chat saying, don't mention the Eagles. Yeah, Kristen. Oh, Kristen, by the way, how'd the job interview go? Kristen Swenson had a job interview the other day. How did it go? I don't know if I saw the answer to that. Richard Chavez says, here in Rio Rancho, rents run from $900 to $1,200 for a single family home. Is Rio Rancho, Arizona? I love taking money low down. McKinnon says, what do you think about coronavirus related distribution? Should money be moved to a self-directed IRA? Heck yeah. Kristen says, it was a recruiter and the job wasn't suited for me, but she's going to keep on looking. Good for you. Yeah, Kathy Gomez, it's just a savings account. Outlet works just like a savings account, except it's way higher than your savings account, like for interest rate. So when you deposit money in that savings account, it's backed by cryptocurrency. So you get a 6% interest savings account. Again, by morninginvest.com/outlet, they will actually also deposit money in your account for free. So when you use that link, when you open your account, if you put $100 in there, $50 or whatever, they will deposit money in that account also as a bonus for opening the account. So go to morninginvest.com/outlet. That's my only savings account. It's the only one I use. And it's free. It's free to set up. It's just like getting a savings account. You can do it all right on your phone. Your whiteboard looks like the Eagles' offensive strategy. Come on, Corey. It does. Yeah, it does. Grover's ready to pounce on you for that comment.
Aw, man.
Exactly. Well, much love to all of you guys. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Really appreciate you taking time out of your day to educate yourself around your personal finance, empower yourself, and hopefully get a little bit more educated in the process. Thanks for all of your great feedback and making me laugh. We'll be here tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern time, everyone. Much love to all of you. Don't forget to download the bootcamp if you haven't already. Morninginvest.com/bootcamp. Thank you, everyone. We will see you. Hey, maybe we'll even see you later today. If we get a stimulus framework announced later this afternoon, I will bring it to you live. We'll do a live show. Thanks, everyone. Take care.